Hello and welcome to The Lancet Voice. I'm Jessamy Baganall, Senior Executive Editor at The Lancet, and I'm joined by my co-host Gavin Cleaver. Today we talk to one of the authors on a recent series published by The Lancet on menopause. The series was made up of four papers and covered a wide range of topics. It sparked some interesting conversations about how we think and talk about a natural part of a woman's life. Today we speak to Professor Geeta Mishra, who among many other things is a Professor of Life Course Epidemiology at the University of Queensland in Australia. Her paper focused on early menopause in women, and we spoke to her about how common it is, what we do and don't know about it, how it affects women, and how we should be thinking about it. We hope you enjoy the episode, and as always, you can find Gavin and I on all your usual social media platforms. We'd love to hear from you about this topic.
Professor Geeta Mishra, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast and welcome to The Lancet Voice. Perhaps we could start with you introducing yourself.
So thank you and thank you for this opportunity. My name is Geeta Mishra. I'm a professor of life course epidemiology in women's health. I'm based at the Australian Women and Girls Health Research Centre at the University of Queensland in Brisbane.
You're the author of, or one of the authors, I should say, of one of the papers in our recent menopause series in The Lancet, and your paper specifically looked at health and the early menopause. So I guess very broadly then, to start off, how common is early menopause and how do we define it?
Absolutely. So good question. So let me put some things in context. First of all, we know that in high-income countries, the average age of menopause is between 50 to 51 years old, okay? But we know that around 8% of women in high-income countries will experience what we call early menopause, and that is menopause between the ages of 40 to 44 years. Globally, about 12% of women will experience early menopause, that is between 40 to 44 years.
So it's a higher relative percentage in low and middle income countries.
Absolutely, yes. And that, you know, we're thinking why that could be the reason. And I think it's important, again, to be thinking about the distribution of age at menopause. We know that, as I mentioned before, in high income countries, the average age is between 50, 51 years. But in low middle income countries, let's look at India, for instance, their average age of menopause is 46 years. Okay, so in India, women have their average age of menopause is 46. So then you can imagine that if we define early menopause as between 40 to 44, most of the women will fall in the early menopause definition, right? So that is why in low middle income countries, the prevalence of early menopause is higher, and that's because of our definition of early menopause, which is 40 to 44 years.
That does make sense. It would be really great to hear from you, you know, what are some of the challenges that women who go through early menopause face? What are the, both on a psychological but also on a physical level in terms of short and long-term, you know, if you want to call it complications or at least effects?
Okay, so first of all, the diagnosis of early menopause is often not straightforward, right? Unless there is a clear medical cause is identified. So for instance, for some cancers, the women might have complete removal of both her ovaries, okay? So the diagnosis usually is being made on symptoms that the women experience and also some biomedical assessment. The challenges there is that currently there is no consensus criteria for diagnosing early menopause, right? So in terms of what are the challenges the women are facing, first of all, just that uncertainty or not knowing if they're going through early menopause and yet they're getting all these symptoms. So if we think about women generally going through menopause, okay, so regardless of their age at menopause, people commonly experience vasomotor symptoms, that is hot flushes, night sweats. They also may experience sleep disturbances, and vaginal dryness. There's also been studies to show that women going through menopause might experience depressed mood. And also, usually people from Asian background complain of joint and joint pains. Okay. So these are women going through menopause at the average age of, 50, 51 years. We actually don't know if these symptoms are more severe in women going through early menopause. We don't know that. We also don't know if their symptoms persist for a longer period of time or longer duration. We don't know that. So that is really unmet need. But we do know that, women going through early menopause may have additional distress as they are experiencing these symptoms several years earlier than their peers, right? And in some cases, they're experiencing all these symptoms between 5 to 10 years earlier than what they may have expected. If you think about the average age of 50 to 51. So we believe that there is additional psychological distress that women may go through, but also, exactly the severity of the symptoms, how long they experience, what else do they experience, we actually don't have a lot of data on it. So that's the challenge.
Interesting. And can we just dig into the kind of epidemiology? Like, it's very interesting that you were saying the age of what's sort of considered early menopause differs around the world. Do we know that the definition or what we think of as early menopause is actually early menopause? Or are we kind of pathologizing a kind of normal range of what would be acceptable?
At this stage, the definition of early menopause is based on data from high-income countries. Basically, it's based on some American data. And they think that, early menopause is about 1 or 2 standard deviation away from the average age of menopause. So they work it out. They say, okay, this is between 40 to 44. Yeah. So, and this is being used to define early menopause, regardless of where you come from, which cultural background, this is it. It's a hard number. And I think that's, again, we need to challenge that concept, because what is early in high-income countries may be just average in other parts of the world. And I think that's another question, another thing that we should be thinking about from the epidemiology of age at menopause. Does that make sense? Yeah.
It does. It does. It's really helpful. And I think obviously it has implications for how women manage their symptoms, because also when you say, in different countries, the provisions for women are going to be different. So if presumably, do we have different ways of suggesting management to women who are going through early menopause to late menopause, or does that vary a lot as well?
One thing we can say, and studies, large epidemiological studies have shown, that women who go through early menopause, apart from experiencing all these short-term symptoms and all that, in the long term, they are at higher risk of cardiovascular disease. We've shown our study using the Interlace Consortium that they may be at 30% higher risk of cardiovascular disease after menopause. That we know. The second thing is that we also know that they are at increased risk of osteoporosis. And so I think the take-home message here is that there is a lot of lifestyle interventions that can be done a lot earlier on to monitor these things. So, for instance, we can help advise women on, healthy lifestyle that would prevent them from having cardiovascular disease. We can, advise women on doing weight-bearing exercise for their bone density. So there's a lot of lifestyle management that can be done a lot earlier on for these women. I think that's important because they are at an increased risk.
Yeah, I really like that, this concept of using the menopause as a sort of stage to connect with women and intervene in terms of long-term prevention for other complications. You're really using it as an opportunity to make those interactions with healthcare professionals and health systems more effective and efficient in the long term, as well as empowering women, to deal with their own symptoms.
So I think that, look, the way I would like to see it is that we can use it as really an opportunity to check on our health and get, you know, communicate with our health professionals and really prepare for the next, you know, 30, 40 years ahead of us post-menopause, you know. Being proactive and you know, doing all the lifestyle interventions is very important.
You mentioned in your paper people with early menopause falling through a gap in care. So perhaps you could tell us a little bit about why that happens, you know, what some of the outcomes from that are and why it's important.
Well, I think where there is gap in care is that they've been not been diagnosed correctly. So, you know, if they, between the ages 40, 44, they may go to the doctors and all that. They might say, oh, no, you're perimenopause, or, you know, somehow they don't think that the women could be postmenopausal. Yes, you know, so, and by the time you do all the diagnostics and the symptoms and all that, you might actually move into average age. You know, the diagnosis happened a lot later than, and they would have gone through the early menopause transition. So I think it is just, you know, making sure that the women are identified accurately and a lot earlier on. And we've kind of, in our frame, clinical framework, given a sort of a checklist to identify, you know, that can be used to identify women going through menopause, early menopause.
Do the misdiagnoses have a kind of lot of knock-on effects? I guess they miss these lifestyle interventions you were talking about.
Yeah, exactly. And also monitoring, you know, that if they know they are at risk of these chronic conditions later on, you know, then they can be doing something and start a lot earlier on in life. I think that's very important. And also, like, their care, they might feel really, what's wrong with me, you know, like no one is really taking me seriously. So I think it's very important for women to be engaged and involved at the outset when they have these symptoms, talk to their GP or clinicians and get that kind of two-way conversation happening. So part of the article here is also to empower women to let them know what they can expect as they're going through early menopause.
Do you think that these gaps in care are kind of exacerbated by the difference in resources in high-income countries and low middle-income countries?
I think so. I also think that the gaps might be, to be honest with you, I still think that we don't know a lot about the experience of early menopause in women from low middle-income countries. You know, we actually don't, they might be going through early menopause for them, might be in their early, you know, late 30s. We don't know that. So, do you know what I mean? Because they, overall, the whole distribution is shifted left, you know, so they're experiencing these symptoms a lot earlier. So one of the things what we have done is to estimate age of menopause for women going through menopause earlier is to actually get a family history. So we do know that if the mothers have gone through early menopause, sisters have gone through early menopause, chances are quite high that she will go through early menopause. The other predictors you can use is smokers. Smokers tend to go through early menopause as well. So that's the thing. Women with no children also tend to go through, have early menopause. So you can see that, you know, these factors do contribute to our age at menopause, and early menopause happens to women who you know, have that history, family history of early menopause, if they're smokers, if they don't have children. These all things tend to lead to earlier menopause.
We've talked quite a lot, or at least touched on, kind of gaps in the data. Are there major gaps in the data on women going through early menopause, and what do we still need to find out? What do we need better data on?
Well, look, I do think that we need to, first of all, to actually find out more detailed experience of the women going through her symptoms as she's going through the menopause. You know, more detailed, is it longer, is it more severe? Does she get any other type of symptoms? So that's important, number one. The other thing also is future health. We from the data sets that we have, we can look at cardiovascular disease and osteoporosis. But what about other conditions? For instance, mental health. We don't really have good evidence whether women are more likely to experience depression during early menopause. You know, so that's a gap there in terms of that. And similarly, you know, whether she's at higher risk of cognitive decline, we don't know that, you know. So I think those future health implications still lacking. The ones that I mentioned with CVD and bone health, that's very clear cut. Now, having said all these things, I must also say a positive thing about menopause, if I may. And they're at lower risk of breast cancer. Okay, so I think, you know, when you look at the whole spectrum, you know, they're at increased risk of cardiovascular and all that, but they're at lower risk of breast cancer is because they're less likely to be exposed to a longer duration of estrogen, which 10.
Yeah.
So that's one thing that is known. Really getting more information on people from low middle income countries is important. Understanding the experience of menopause is crucial. Yeah. And keep in mind that, you know, these women are young women. They still have jobs and, you know, the economic consequences of early menopause, I think it's huge, you know, if we don't manage it or deal with it, hopefully.
Yeah, so what are some of the economic consequences of early menopause? Maybe we could talk about how it actually affects the economy. And also, does it affect the earning power of women who are going through early menopause?
Well, what I like to think about is, again, you know, is their management. So if they have, you know, debilitating symptoms like hot flushes and night sweats, then, you know, she might not be able to go to work, right? So I think that's important to realize. And that this is where I think workplace has to be a bit more supportive in the sense of being more flexible, making sure that, you know, the work environment is conducive for women going through menopause. The other thing also is, I think it's important to talk about it. It's a natural process. All women will go through it. Menopause, you know, it's just different timing. So again, making it more normalized is a good thing to do.
I think it's important that we sort of slightly address the elephant in the room in how the series landed and some of the issues around that. So, I mean, a major message of the series, it's a fantastic series, is about empowerment of women. But one of the papers talks a bit about menopause being over-medicalized. And, you know, obviously on the one hand, it's easy, you know, there's a group of people that's true, you know, because we're actually trying to medicalize a normal period of life. And it's more that society has made it very difficult for women to go through this period. On the other hand, there's a group of people saying, wait a minute, there hasn't been any research into menopause. We don't have any treatments. You know, we've completely neglected this group of women. How can it be over-medicalized when we can't even treat it properly? You know, and I say treat in inverted commas because, again, that depends on whether you're viewing it as a sort of pathology or not. And I just wanted to hear, you know, your thoughts on this sort of line between the two, because it's been so interesting to see the response to the series and to see some of these issues come up. And I'm really pleased that it has, actually, because I think, you know, these are really important topics and issues that we need to discuss and we need to address in a very clear, you know, and inclusive and sort of science-based way, but also in a social way, understanding the social context in which we're all living.
Good questions and comments, Jasmine. But what I, personally for me, I think it's a natural part of aging. The culture that I come from, you know, Indian culture and all that, it's, you know, women going through menopause, it's seen like, you know, you've reached a high status, you're a matriarch, you know, and everybody respects you, calls you G all of a sudden. So to me, it's, you know, so it's very cultural based, right? And so I don't see that negative connotation. Now, women do go through symptoms and it can be very debilitating. And I think for them, you know, whatever we can find management, there might be medication that they can take to manage it. it's available. They want lifestyle intervention. We all know that it's available, non-hormonal. So there's all kinds of options that are available for women. But for me personally, I believe that menopause is natural part of aging, just like how we have menarche, we have periods. And I know some cultures celebrate that, you know, it's celebrated. Yeah. Absolutely, right? We have menarche, we have pregnancy, people celebrate. So let's enjoy menopause as well, you know, another stage of our life, and then we can fall. So that's how I see that, you know, rather than thinking about medicalizing or not. I think it's such a natural phase of our life. Let's embrace it and deal with whatever we need to. Yeah, some cultures, like, you know, even Japanese culture, you know, like, we do know that they report less symptoms, right? Menopause is in there. But we don't know whether they experience less symptoms, but they do report it. But, you know, you get to see they have this, you know, all of a sudden this extra respect they've gained just because they're in that menopausal stage. So I see it in a very positive light. I say, yeah, that's good. Next lot, you know?
Yeah.
Thanks. Yes. That's why I think it's important as well to understand different cultures and how they deal with menopause, you know, because not everybody will have this. Yeah, I love that, you know, as menopause across cultures.
Yeah.
That to me is something that we all can learn about and reminds us back you know.
Draw a lot of insights from
ancient times. Absolutely, you know, I think that's certainly trying to understand.
What other support might be helpful for those with early menopause?
Well, I think that first of all, definitely they may need psychological support, you know, counseling, because if they're feeling distressed and they're getting all this, experiencing menopause a lot earlier, I think that's important, psychological support. And also I like to think about, you know, helping them with a strategy to manage, or even, you know, strategies to maintain or improve their both bone health, cardiovascular health. You know, generally this is going to make women feel much better about themselves. So I think that kind of advice is important. The other thing also is monitor them, you know, over time in terms of get their blood pressure down, you know, check their lipids level, because these are all markers of, you know, cardiovascular disease. Get DEXA's work done, you know. So get all those statistics, collect them and monitor how they're progressing, because we can do something about it. The good news is, for instance, if cardiovascular disease, you know, we know that they're high risk, they can take, depending on their blood, they can take things to reduce their blood pressure. If they can't do it through lifestyle intervention, we know that they can reduce their lipids profile by taking statin, you know. So there are medication, well-proven medication, that safe medication that women can take to deal with it, to manage their cardiovascular risk. I think that's really, you know, get them to do that a lot earlier in life before they experience these events.
So I would imagine availability of these kind of interventions and, you know, helpful things varies across countries, right?
Absolutely. So the best thing, of course, is the lifestyle interventions, you know, for instance, again, exercising, doing weight bearing, eating healthily, not smoking, not drinking excessively. So these are things that will keep women healthy, at least try and put their cardiovascular disease at bay, or monitor it, because some of them might be already at high risk due to genetics, right? So at least we can, they know that, you know, I have a much higher risk of getting cardiovascular disease down the track if they've had early menopause. Let's monitor. Let's look at my the cardiovascular risk markers. How are they doing? What can I do to reduce it? And that could be medication or through lifestyle.
What for you are kind of the immediate next steps that are really important in early menopause research?
I really think, for me, it's really getting data from low and medium income countries, just to look at their distribution of age and menopause, and how would we define early menopause in this group. You know, I don't think it would be 40 to 44, it might even be earlier. But also then, how do they manage you know, so people in China or in India or in low middle income, how do they manage their symptoms? You know, it would be nice to hear from the women themselves as well. So my first thing I like to do is obviously, you know, get that data, because we have sparse data on low middle income countries, you know, on menopause, experience of menopause in this group. And I have to admit that some of the work that we've published and referenced in terms of the long-term impact of early or premature menopause actually came from the consortia that we're leading. We have about 800,000 women from different parts of the world. And because you have such large numbers, you can actually look and see, study early menopause in detail, you know. So we want to be able to do similar sort of things with data from low middle income countries. So that's important.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of The Lancet Voice. Remember, you can subscribe wherever you usually get your podcasts, and we'll see you again next time.